Sports Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It's Flames Talk on a Tuesday, November 12th. Steinberg along with you, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts on Tuesdays. We always catch up with our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli. He's brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Mr. Saravalli, how are you?
How you doing, Pat?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Have you made it home yet? Or are we still en route from GM's meetings?
Yeah, just in the car. Landed just a short time ago, and on my way home.
Okay, and we will get to your time at Hockey Hall of Fame weekend and GM's meetings a little bit later on, because I'm curious as to what you found out and some interesting tidbits, takeaways from there over the weekend. But we'll start it off with the Calgary Flames, who are coming off one of their more impressive wins of the season against LA. And, you know, don't need to dive in specifically on that. But, you know, now 16 games into the season, Frank, this group still is finding ways to scratch and claw out points, scratch and claw out wins. You know, we've talked about them at different times for the first month and a bit of the season, just in terms of, you know, their work ethic and their pluckiness and all that type of stuff. And now as we approach the quarter mark of the season, I'm just curious your overall impressions on this Flames team as the sample size starts to get a little larger.
Yeah, I'd say this is going to sound funny to say, but I'm actually more impressed with what we've seen from the Flames maybe over the last 3 to 5 games than the first 6 games of the year. It's easy to get off to a hot start and then have things, you know, if they go sideways, you get punched in the face, how do you react? And the way that they've sort of steadied themselves, gotten up, dusted themselves off, I think that to me is a fantastic sign. And just think of a lot of the buzzwords that I used maybe a month ago as the season was just getting started. Connected team play, want to be there, a cohesiveness in the group that I think has been sorely lacking. I think when you see a team respond the way that the Flames have, that's what you're looking for, and that's definitely closer to what I've seen.
So here we are. We call it U.S. Thanksgiving here. You call it Thanksgiving there. We're just over 2 weeks away from your version of Thanksgiving. There's that magical mark every year. There's those numbers that come out right before U.S. Thanksgiving about, you know, teams in playoff spots and what it all means. How relevant is that period? How relevant is that if you're the Calgary Flames?
I think for the most part, it's probably pretty significantly overblown. I mean, we've got teams almost every year that sort of poke holes in that theory.
Yeah.
What I will say is the really important thing, this is the only thing that really matters, is got to give yourself a chance. Like, you can't be so far out of it that you've got no hope and prayer. And there's a couple teams that are facing that significant reality today, tomorrow, in the next couple weeks. The Pittsburgh Penguins, probably to a larger extent, you know, just some of the other teams that have been off to scuffling starts. The Buffalo Sabres are getting dangerously close. It starts to get late early unless you are within striking distance, somewhere in the mix. And I'd say the Flames have, in what also could be a really soft middle of this Western Conference, they've given themselves an opportunity here, probably defying some expectations.
What's the biggest threat to them, you know, not being in the eight when it's all said and done? Are we talking about Colorado? Is that the team that they're in a playoff spot? Edmonton's not. Colorado, Edmonton, are those the groups that would be the largest threats to kind of return to where we expect them to be and displace this Flames group?
Yeah, Just do me a favor. I'm in the car. Read me the top eight today.
So in the conference right now, the top eight would be Winnipeg, Minnesota, Dallas in the Central, LA, Vegas, Calgary in the Pacific, Vancouver, Colorado in the wild card, and then Edmonton, Utah, each a point out.
Yeah. So look, Edmonton and Colorado, I think are going to find some sort of way. The Avs are getting healthier. Nathan MacKinnon is playing at an unbelievable all-world pace. 154 points, I checked this morning. Cale Makar is putting up Bobby Orr-type numbers. And that Avs team, while there might be some kind of tension to take their foot off the gas, if they can maybe just get like some modicum of goaltending, they're going to find a way to bounce back. Connor McDavid has been extremely quiet.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to put up points. That's not breaking news. You don't need to be an NHL insider for that info. However, you're looking at it from a how teams might catch the Flames perspective. What I'd also say is, there might be some opportunity ahead of you in the standings when it comes to what this looks like when it's all said and done. I think the Minnesota Wild are going to have a very difficult time sustaining the offense that they've had to this point. Kirill Kaprizov has been out of his mind. But the way the rest of the team has scored, outside of Matt Boldy, I'm not sure how much of it is sustainable. And you look at some of their numbers, and it would indicate that they've mostly basically had a ton of luck to start this year. And look, I'm not slagging the Wild, but I think they're gettable. I think the LA Kings have been pretty solid, probably even better than some would have anticipated. Will they hit a rut at some point this year? And maybe not. I mean, the amazing part about this start is that they've done it all without Drew Doughty, but are the Kings as good as they've looked? So I wouldn't just be looking in the rearview mirror. That's not always the right way to look at it.
Yep, no, and that's very fair because if Colorado and Edmonton both get in, it's not just Calgary who they would be necessarily displacing. So that's a really important point. I'll say this much. That Kings team, and I know that they are capable of much better than what they played, especially in the first half of Monday's game here in Calgary. But that Kings team didn't inspire a ton of confidence. I mean, I know that they entered sitting on top of the conference, or sorry, on top of the division on Monday night. But of the two teams that you mentioned, LA's been the one all along that I felt maybe the most leery about all season going into the season, and definitely that hasn't changed as we approach the quarter mark of the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to, like, do the Steve Buscemi meme with the skateboard and say, like, how do you do, fellow kids? but, like, as my son would say, like, part of, to me, at least watching from afar, part of what I've seen from the Kings has been, quote, a little sus.
I think you sold that. You didn't need to give us the visual of Steve Buscemi and the skateboard. That was good. That was good. A little sus. I didn't mind that. Flames are in Vancouver on Tuesday night, second half of back-to-back. How close? I mean, there's differing reports from people in Vancouver, and it feels like the buzz about Thatcher Demko returning is getting a little bit more valid. But from your understanding, are we starting to close in on maybe a return for their number one goaltender?
Yeah, so they don't have anything firmly circled in Sharpie yet because it's really dependent on the way the next couple weeks go. But since he rejoined the team last week in L.A. for their morning skate, the first time he was really part of any team exercises this season on the ice, the plan was to stack two consecutive full weeks of practice, one on top of the other, and then hopefully at that point he'd be ready to return. So there's growing hope that before this month is over, that you could see Thatcher Demko make his debut. And, I mean, I don't need to tell you, Calgary's goaltending has been pretty much excellent from start to finish so far, almost through the first quarter of the season. You look at Lankinen, he's kind of saved their season, and the rest of their team has really played a lot better the last 10 days or so. and seem to be picking up what Rick Tocchet's putting down. But when it comes to Artur Shelov's, like, he's got some of the worst numbers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And so that part kind of surprised me, because I like everyone, I saw Shelov's play in the playoffs, and I was like, man, this guy at 24 or however old he is, he's going to be in the mix for a while. And it seems like the best place for him right now, at least to regain confidence, is the AHL. So the sooner they can make that swap, the better off the Canucks are going to be, not to mention just from a pure, hey, this guy's the backbone of our team. He's supposed to be the guy carrying the mail. That would be a pretty big development for the Vancouver Canucks.
Seems like the Brock Besser injury status, they're not giving away a whole lot in terms of what that looks like. Is this still considered something minor, or we might be talking a bit about a longer time on the shelf for Brock Besser?
I actually haven't done any investigating or poking around. I think everyone has just assumed that this is a concussion that he's dealing with, okay, based on the way he left the ice. And I think what's really disappointing for me in 2024, look, I'm not one of these people that rails against team lack of injury updates, because if you want to cry about it, just dig and get the info yourself. But for me, when it's so obvious what it is, or at least it was apparent that that's what it was, just say it. We're long past the point with a concussion now that, you know, we can't have an open and honest conversation. And I think that probably needs to change throughout the league. If that's what you're dealing with, let's just call it what it is.
Yeah. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, and more. Historic start for the Winnipeg Jets with wins in 14 of their first 15. Frank, where on earth did this start from the Jets come from?
I am so glad you framed that question that way, and I know that we talk a lot, but we did not talk about this. That's basically exactly how I started off my podcast with Kevin Cheveldayoff, which drops tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
I flat out said to him, like, did you see this coming? Like, where did this offense come from? I mean, we knew about Connor Hellebuck and the commitment to defense and how they allowed fewer than 200 goals last season, which is crazy in today's scoring environment. But the fact that they've scored at will 4.5 goals a game, the fact that they have 11 players through the first 15 games of the year that have already hit double digits in points, they're deep, their power play is clicking at 42%, and oh, by the way, they have who Kevin Cheveldayoff called the best goalie of our time in net. I mean, they've been a wagon this year. And beyond that, they've also won games that they probably haven't really had a ton of business winning. Like, look at that Colorado game last week. They were getting crushed by the Avs, and Connor Hellebuck carries them to a 1-0 win. Refuses to let them lose is the quote that Kevin Cheveldayoff had. So they are a pretty scary team, and I just didn't see this offense clicking the way that it did, particularly because there really weren't any changes. This is the same team that we saw last year for the most part, for better or for worse, and they've been way better.
Are we right now talking enough about, and I know that things have been downright awful in Anaheim, and maybe that is why Lucas Dostal's start to the season has kind of got lost in the shuffle, but are we talking enough about how good he's been between the pipes for the Ducks?
Probably not, because his numbers have been suppressed by the sheer struggles of their defense.
Yeah.
And their team as a whole. In reality, he's probably been a top three goalie in the league this year. But so we haven't talked enough about Lucas Dostal, but I would say we also haven't talked enough about how lifeless this Ducks team has been in various stretches so far. They look to me like a team that is really grappling with their head coach. And I know Greg Cronin is only about 95 games-ish into his tenure, but it has been a rough start. I think he was extremely hard on that team last year. And I know that he, you know, the mandate was to come into this year with a bit of a new attitude and approach. And I think a lot of people were feeling better about things to start the year. And I think it's already kind of gone sideways again, at least according to people in that locker room that I talked to. So it's been really difficult for the Ducks. And I think the surprise has been that this is a team loaded with some young talent that should be doing a lot better than it has. And it's really, I think, put a damper on a bunch of bright young players. I mean, look at Trevor Zegras.
Yeah.
Look at his production. I mean, there's a guy 65 and 63 points, I think, in prior seasons that he just looks like a shell of himself.
The and it's funny that you went there because that was my next question. Like the thing that I had written down is how concerning is Anaheim's lack of a step forward here, and that's just it. Like at some point when you're going to kind of scorched earth it and get your high picks and they've, as you mentioned, whether it's Leo Carlson or the other impressive young talent, you mentioned Zegras, so on and so forth, you bring in this young talent and you start to build towards being a contender again, but at some point you've got to take that step forward, right? And it felt like maybe this year was going to be that year. Was that kind of your feel, that this could have been that step forward year for the Ducks?
I mean, maybe like the second level of steps, like if that makes any sense. Like they're not on the ground floor anymore, but they've got a long way to go to get to contending for the playoffs. To me, they were definitely supposed to be more competitive, and it's not even so much a team thing. It's also more of an individual thing at this point. You know, who can you point to so far in the Duck season and say, yeah, outside of Lucas Dostal, that has been a really impressive year. There really isn't anyone. And when you've got nights where the Sharks, with a way less talent, they look like they've got twice or three times the energy that you do, that part is not really excusable.
Yeah. Okay, it's Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk. And as he mentioned off the top, just landed back home in Philly from Hockey Hall of Fame weekend and GM's meetings in Toronto. We'll start with Hockey Hall of Fame weekend, induction, so on and so forth. Just, give us the synopsis of the weekend and how much fun it was to be a part of it.
Man, it never gets old. It truly is one of the best weekends of the year. It's amazing that basically all 32 GMs are in town, agents, former Hall of Fame players, former teammates that all get together for parties. And it's one weekend where people can kind of put aside what's happening right now in the league, wins and losses, transactions, waivers, injuries, whatever it might be, and everyone has a smile on their face. And then the emotion of it all and watching these players and builders, executives, and even a couple friends from the media side reach the pinnacle of their career and all the work that they've put into it, it's always so satisfying. Like I'm such a sap at weddings because I'm one of those people that listening to, even if you're not super tight, listening to the speech of a best man or maid of honor or a dad to his son or whatever it might be, just wearing the feels, and to see and know what work everyone's put in to get to that point, like the rarest of the rare, it's an amazing night.
And then GM's meetings. And I always love the Hockey Hall of Fame induction weekend as well. Love the speeches. Love going back and watching them when it's all said and done. You mentioned all 32 general managers in the same spot. Anything of note come from the GM's meetings from what you were able to ascertain poking around?
So I'll give you kind of a rapid fire. There wasn't really anything like super headline grabbing.
Okay.
I'll say that there was lots of talk about the upcoming CBA negotiations. Like, the league is starting to canvass the GMs on what they'd like to see when it comes to things like term limits and LTIR and playoff LTIR, things like that. They basically want GMs to start coming up with a priority list in order of things that they'd like to see tackled in the next CBA. So that conversation has begun. There was lots of discussion without really any firm information on the NCAA rule change as it relates to the CHL and how that's going to impact the NHL. There was an update on net guards and cut-resistant equipment, which was an amazing number. 55 of the 708 players so far this year are wearing, I should say skaters, 708 skaters that are wearing a net guard. That seems like a really low number, given we're just 1 year out from the tragic passing of Adam Johnson overseas. And there's a whole host of other, sort of smaller agenda items. They talked about the draft and how it's confirmed to be decentralized, likely to be in L.A., they revealed the dates to the GMs, and I think that was kind of it.
Okay. And I'll just give you a couple rapid fire ones back on that. How long do we expect it to be decentralized for? Like, is that a long-term thing, or they try it for 1 year and then reevaluate?
So behind the scenes, the NHL had actually been working sort of to, because they loved the Sphere last year, right? And how that looked, and they did not necessarily to go back there, but they loved the idea of everyone being in the same town at the same time and how awesome that is from just a league perspective. So they did try and like go back to the GMs and say like, hey, are you guys sure you want to decentralize this and have everyone operate from their own home office or rink? And the answer was yes. And so the league said, okay, fine, no problem, we'll try it. And so I actually asked that exact question to Colin Campbell today, the Hall of Famer himself, and said, theoretically, could this be one and done? And he said, I mean, I guess, like, there hasn't been any long-term agreement. However, even the league recognizes the idea of taking 32 front offices and send them all to one place on a plane, only to then get back to exactly where they came from in a rush for free agency and then development camps, probably isn't the best use of everyone's time and travel money and resources. So the NFL has obviously been, the NBA, they've been doing this for a long time from their war rooms. That's probably how it's going to remain, at least for the foreseeable future, because that was the appetite of the GMs.
Okay.
But we'll see if there's any spectacular technological failures.
Yeah, I guess that would be the next part, is that's got to all be dialed in and still a made-for-television event. Okay, last point for you, and our hit last week came just before the CHL NCAA news broke, whether it was at GM's meetings or just people you've spoken to in the hockey world. What has the reaction been to the NCAA allowing CHL players to come and play college hockey?
It's funny because I did see people from USA Hockey and the Canadian Hockey League last night at the gala, and same sort of similar informal conversations had with NHL executives and GMs today. And the true answer is no one really knows what to think. There's some obvious pitfalls. There's some leagues that will most certainly be impacted. The BCHL, for one, The USHL is another. U Sports as a whole in Canada will probably be significantly impacted. I think it's not really all that different than COVID for me. Like, we're probably not going to understand the ripple effect and ramifications of this decision for quite a few years to really wrap our heads around it. So it's happening. The league hasn't even gotten into the nitty-gritty details yet of things like, if you draft a player from the CHL and then he decides to go play NCAA hockey, when is the expiration date of your exclusive rights to sign that player, the signing rights?
Right.
Like, all those things need to all be worked out. And no one is really standing on any firm ground yet of knowing what to feel.
Be really interesting to see where that goes, because I'm really fascinated in terms of where the largest impacts, positive and negative, are felt as well. Great stuff, Frank. I know it's been a whirlwind day, so appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again next week as always, but thank you, pal. Have yourself a great rest of your week, hey?
For you, anything. See you, Pat.
You better. Thanks, Frank. Frank Saravalli, he's our Daily Faceoff NHL Insider. He joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk, and he joins us brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.